Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Robert W. Sullivan IV is with us, and his latest is Cinema Symbolism 3. Now, Rob, we were talking about a couple of movies, Vanilla Sky, The Matrix, Fight Club. I think you mentioned that they were all sort of examples of Gnostic films. But they have something else in common, and that is there's some 9/11 imaging in those movies. And, of course, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary. What's that all about?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And that's what makes it even more interesting is all these films, the ones you just mentioned, and there's some others, they all feature subtle 9/11 imagery, somewhat, you know, anticipating the event on the actual day. And of course, you're absolutely correct. We're coming up on the 20-year anniversary. It's hard to believe. But yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the Matrix, and again, these movies all have to deal with awakening to consciousness. So Matrix, of course, you have Neo's passport expires on September 11th, 2001. In Vanilla Sky, the end of the movie, the Tom Cruise character is taken up to this enormously high skyscraper in New York City overlooking the Twin Towers, and in order to obtain consciousness to the real world, he has to leap off, and he has to plummet down. And of course, when you see this, you're immediately, you know, recall the people leaping off the buildings, the Twin Towers, on that day. And that movie actually caught flack for that when it was released. The director, Russell Crowe, was urged to remove that scene, but he didn't. He stood his ground, and he didn't. And I think I'm glad he did, because it's very effective. It's very poignant to see. And then you get movies, other ones like Donnie Darko, that features a plane, an engine crashing through the Donnie's bedroom. It cuts to an American flag, and the director of that film, Richard Kelly. The movie was released about a month after 9/11. Of course, this was filmed beforehand, but he actually blamed that scene for the movie underperforming in the box office. He thought it was too reminiscent of 9/11. The Fight Club is another one where, I mean, you have this destruction at the buildings at the end. Tyler refers to them as Ground Zero. You have the destruction of the piece of artwork, the corporate artwork that looks like the sphere that used to stand at the plazas of the World Trade Centers. So it is unique. The Patriot is another one, although that's not a Gnostic film. That came out in the summer of 2000, where Mel Gibson is making the chair at the very beginning. He weighs it. It weighs 9 pounds, 11 ounces, and then he sits on it and it comes crashing down. What also makes some of this a little even more strange is the timing, the timing sequence with this stuff. I mean, you have September 11th, 2 years earlier, almost to the day, which was, I believe the date was September 21st, 1999. So nearly almost to the day you had the release of Fight Club. So it's almost like a countdown when the movie was released. And then 2 years before that, in 1997, this was September 21st, 1997, was the broadcast of the Simpsons episode, Homer Simpson versus New York City. This is the one where Bart waves the money in front of the magazine that has 9/11 on it with the trade towers. The trade tower serves the 11. So that what makes it all even more strange is it's like a countdown almost. I mean, it's almost to the day. So yeah, I mean, it is this very strange overlap that you have. You have this Gnostic Hollywood's, you know, eagerness to put out these Gnostic films at the turn of the millennium, but prior you also have them anticipating seemingly September 11th. It's
right. Well, these were all obviously produced before the actual event of 9/11. So the director was not deliberately placing these images in there. Or I mean, what's your theory as to what's happening here? Sometimes we call it predictive programming. I mean, the idea that somehow they had foreknowledge is a pretty sinister, cynical look at humanity. But how else do we explain it?
I mean, there is another alternative explanation. I mean, sure, you can always say they had foreknowledge, but that is a bit of a hard pill to swallow, no pun intended. But, you can definitely look at the idea of the theories of, Carl Jung and, of Platonism, where the creation, the making of the movie is a creative experience. And the idea is because it's such a highly creative experience, the filmmaker is tapping into a higher realm of consciousness, and that these images are just being slipped in there, unintentionally, but very profoundly. Again, this comes out of the world of Platonism. This comes out of the world of Gnosticism. This is revived by European Christian mystics. You can find this in the works of people like Meister Eckhart, Jakob Böhm, Emanuel Swedenborg. These are kind of the guys who are influencing Jung, who get into dream vision, the idea of prophecy, and creative thought or creation. That's one explanation. That's another explanation for it. I mean, and again, I would stress also that it's not only 9/11 that this happens in. I mean, the movie The China Syndrome, which dealt with a meltdown of a nuclear reactor, was released, I think, 2 weeks before the Three Mile Island incident back in 1979, 1980, whenever it was. There was a cartoon called The Legends of Chamberlain Heights that about a year earlier had Kobe Bryant dying in a helicopter crash. So it's not just limited to 9/11 and these Gnostic films like The Matrix. You'll find it in other films and other TV shows as well.
So the purpose of putting symbolism and these different layers into a movie, is it like Easter eggs? They're put there for people like you to see them and say, "Wow, that's pretty cool." Or is there something maybe even nefarious at work here? Do these occult symbols that are placed in these movies have a certain power?
Oh, absolutely. I think they do have a certain power, because it turns the film, once they're detected in the film, it turns the movie into something legendary. It's really, in my opinion, part of the motivation as to why these guys do it is it's creating mythology. That's literally what it's doing. Here we are talking about it. I mean, here I am writing about it. Anytime you are, I've always found that a movie that doesn't have any esoteric symbol or esoteric themes in it doesn't make it a bad movie, but the ones that do, I find, are always just so much more fascinating to watch. Those are the movies that I find myself drawn to watching over and over again. I mean, these are some of the greatest, biggest blockbusters Hollywood has ever produced. I mean, Star Wars, Harry Potter, these are all films that deal with archetypal imagery. The Hero's Journey, which was documented by Joseph Campbell, the American mythologist. These movies are all just retellings of these ancient mythologies, and they incorporate it, they place in it these extra layers of symbolism, themes, undercurrents, and it just really pops off the screen. It plays to both the viewer's conscious and subconscious mind. And I'm you know, some, like I said, some of the really sophisticated filmmakers, really know how to use this. Kubrick's a great example. Darren Aronofsky, Aaron Ari Aster, these guys, Robert Zemeckis is another one. These guys, Alfred Hitchcock, these guys, David Lynch again, another one. These guys really know what they're doing, and it's quite effective. People talk about it. People, are drawn to these television shows, these movies, and it's no wonder that they, that they generate the money that they do. People are hooked on them.
What about the idea of a film as a confession almost? You've heard, of course, about The Shining and the theory that Stanley Kubrick was trying to confess in that film that he was the one responsible for filming the lunar landing, the Apollo 11 landing on a soundstage somewhere in the desert, because they wanted to make sure, not necessarily that the landing was a hoax itself, but the actual photographs and film footage was, because it couldn't have been, it couldn't have been shot on the moon. So we see all of this imagery in The Shining. We see the little boy wearing the Apollo 11 shirt and, room 237 and all these different references. What do you think about that?
Yeah, The Shining is a really great film, because it's really a study in, I'll get to the moon stuff in a minute. The Shining is a great study in repetition. Kubrick repeats tropes all over the place in that movie, and what he's conveying to your subconscious mind is that the Overlook is an Ouroboros. It's a snake biting its tail. It's a never-ending cycle, and that's, of course, what Jack Torrance and the characters are experiencing. Everything keeps repeating. The murders just keep repeating over and over again. The idea that Kubrick was including this idea is not as far-fetched as it may sound. Of course, like you said, you have the little boy with the Apollo going to room 237. This is not as far-fetched as it sounds, and The Smoking Gun on this was a movie that Kubrick directed beforehand, which is a movie called Barry Lyndon. And that's kind of The Smoking Gun on this, because he filmed that movie using NASA technology, of all things. He wanted to film a movie with scenes that were lit naturally by candlelight, and you couldn't do it. Any time you had a scene where you had characters sitting around a table with candles burning, you always had to have an exterior light. It's not seen on screen. It's behind the camera illuminating it, because the candles didn't light it up enough. However, NASA had developed a lens that filtered light and enhanced the light where you could see it. And through his connections with NASA, Kubrick got access to these lenses and actually used them to film Barry Lyndon. It's quite remarkable, and it's clear-cut documentation that clearly there is a concrete, NASA-Kubrick connection. So the idea that back in the late 60s that Kubrick was retained by NASA, like you said, on a secret soundstage in Nevada somewhere, which is actually seen in a James Bond movie. I think it's Diamonds Are Forever, where Bond accidentally breaks into the, Area 51 secret area and sees the guy filming the fake moon landing. The idea is that they actually could have gone, but they couldn't film there. So, of course, the footage of them hopping around on the moon was in a soundstage filmed by your friend and mine, Stanley Kubrick. And when you couple that, with the idea that NASA, liked his work in 2001 and Dr. Strangelove, and that the fact that Kubrick was using NASA technology to film Barry Lyndon, it's not as far as a stretch as it may sound.
And what about his final film, Eyes Wide Shut? Again, as a confession that he was maybe the appointed filmmaker for the Illuminati, and in this final film, he's letting the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, that seems to be one explanation for it. I mean, clearly he is showing us, the viewers, that that there is this secret society, secret group that is pretty sinister, pulling the strings, as it were. And interestingly, of course, or maybe not so interesting, he died right after the movie was made, I believe right after the movie came out. And this is the idea that Kubrick was kind of exposing this secret organization that was sort of manipulating mankind, pulling the strings, as it were. He does this one thing that he does, and this is one of the reasons I like Kubrick so much, is he uses different techniques. one of the things that he does really effectively in Eyes Wide Shut is the whole uses of Christmas lights. They permeate every scene in the film, and he surrounds them with these, the sins of mankind, as it were, drug use, prostitution, child pornography, child trafficking, sex rings, stuff like that. I mean, every time the Tom Cruise character is incorporating Bill Hartford, is encountering, you know, one of these sins, as it were, degradations, there's always these bright, gaudy Christmas lights present. However, when he gets to the Somerton Mansion, this is where the Illuminati's hanging out, there's no Christmas lights, and this is his Kubrick's way of telling us, the audience, hey, this is where the real evil is. So, yeah, I mean, it's again, something that, Kubrick, you can break it down. I talk about it in actually the second movie book that I wrote. I mean, the one thing that I thought Kubrick did really well was when they're doing the occult ritual in Somertown, the master of ceremonies casts the magic circle counterclockwise, Wittershins, that's black magic, that's not white magic. That's something very interesting. So again, you know, when you're dealing with someone like Stanley Kubrick, you're dealing with a very sophisticated filmmaker. You'll find these stuff permeating things, not only in, you know, the movies like The Shining, Eyes Wide Shut, Barry Lyndon, but one of the movies I also talk about is Lolita, which seems to anticipate every movie he ever made after it, which is fascinating. I can't figure it out. But, Eyes Wide Shut is definitely one of those movies. You definitely throw it into the category of Illuminati cinema, as it were.
And those, I'm guessing, those layers weren't necessarily, let's say, for example, The Shining. Those layers, those symbols weren't contained in the Stephen King novel. Kubrick put those in there on his own, right?
Oh, absolutely. If you actually looked at some of the screenplays that Kubrick was using, you'll see him making notes about it. Wanting to repeat numbers, wanting to repeat doubles, having repetitive tropes in the film. Yeah, I mean, this was all something Kubrick did on his own, and this is one of the reasons why Stephen King hated the theatrical version of The Shining. King's novel is really a ghost story. Kubrick's exercise is Kubrick's films is an exercise in repetition. You have that one scene at the end, or close to the end, where Shelley Duvall goes into the hallway and has the skeleton sitting around. It's actually kind of, in my opinion, looks like a corny haunted house almost. This was kind of the theme that King was emphasizing in the novel, and Kubrick really kind of downplayed it. Kubrick was much more interested in this whole idea of repeating things in The Shining, and that's something that's definitely in the movie that you won't find in the novel.
Right, yeah, he definitely would take
a
book and make it his own.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills, We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.